All right, so question five for you this week. What else did God create? God created all things, and his creation was very good. All right, let's turn back then to James. James chapter 2, beginning at verse 14. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God. You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead. Well, this portion of James is the, I suppose you would say, the most controversial part of James. It's one that has caused great deal of debate in the church over the last couple of thousand years. Certainly, and I think I've mentioned this before, it's the portion that Martin Luther, at least initially, perhaps most famously, almost rejected, as he referred to it as the straw epistle, and said that it was contrary to the teaching of Paul. Now, he later came around, and I think perhaps he came around, hopefully, through some of the reasoning that we're going to take a look at tonight. This passage, sometimes it seems that God gives me a pretty clear outline for a passage, and then there are passages like this where I don't get anything. There's no outline here. So we're just going to kind of go through, to me it seems like, I hope it doesn't come across this way to you guys, it seems like some random ideas. But I hope that they're tied together, and they're tied together by this idea of the difference between belief and faith. What is belief? What is faith? Is there any difference between the two? And does it matter if there's a difference between the two? You see, I think, at least initially, that's kind of the foundation of what it is that James is talking about here. Many surveys done over, the last several decades have asked, in one form or another, kind of a simple question: do you believe in God? And if you ask that, even today, if you ask that question, in this country at least, I think this is still the case, well over 90% of people in this country would check that box and say, yes, I believe in God. Yes, but do you have faith in God? You see, if belief and faith were the same, at least the way the Bible reveals it to us, the nature of faith, it seems that this world would look a lot different than it does. You know, if we truly have faith in God, if belief and faith were the same, and so well over 90% of people believed in God, had faith in God being the same thing, they would live differently than they do. That's kind of the basic sense of what James is saying here, isn't it? It's just simply that belief in God is not enough. As we see him say, even the demons believe, verse 19, and shudder. So that's fine if you want to say you believe in God and check that box. It's not going to save you. There's no salvation, James says, in belief. Salvation comes through what? Faith. And there is a difference. But here's the interesting thing. As I was looking at this, it was interesting to me just how much, as I said, you know, the big controversy in the church for years has been, do James and Paul teach a different gospel? And the answer is clearly no. They align so closely in this passage that it really is unbelievable that people would ever even have that kind of a question. Here's what I mean. You look at, and keep in mind what we just read, what James said, verses 14 through 26. And then we turn to Paul's classic statement of salvation, Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 10. For by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing, it is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast. For we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. See, James and Paul are saying exactly the same thing. Salvation is by faith, but it's a faith that is demonstrated through works. Works that have been prepared for us beforehand, before we were even born. God had this plan that there were works that we would do after we come to faith in him. Faith is the only basis for salvation, but it has to be a faith. And here's the thing, what we would say about faith, I just kind of wrote this down. Works don't create faith. We can't conjure up faith through what we do. However, our works do both confirm our faith and complete our faith. So if you say you have faith, if you are trusting in your faith to save you, James says, well, then show me your works. Because if your faith is real, as Paul said, that means you're going to be engaging in the works that God prepared for you before you were ever saved, before you were ever born. They flow naturally, Paul says. Your faith that comes through God, and then your works that come after you're saved. That's how it happens. That's how it works. So that faith that we have is confirmed by what we do. It's also, it's interesting the way James says it here, completed. Verse 22, you see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. What does he mean by completed? There was a story I saw several years ago about a man. I don't know if they still do this, but you know, I think this goes back to the early 20th century. They would have all these daredevils who would do things at Niagara Falls. You know, they'd get in these barrels and ride down the falls, and then there'd be these high wire acts. They'd string a high wire across Niagara Falls and walk across it. And there was the story of one of these artists, these high wire artists. They had this wire strung up across the falls. And for any of you that have been there to Niagara Falls, you know the Upper Falls area there. It's a broad area. So none of us could ever imagine walking across a rope like that, right? Well, he didn't just walk across it. He had a wheelbarrow. So he took this wheelbarrow and he said, do you think I can get all the way across? And there was a platform on the other end, and then turn around and come all the way back. And this group of people who were familiar with this very famous high wire artist, they said, yeah, we believe you can do that. So he said, okay, let's see. So off he goes with his wheelbarrow across the wire. Makes it all the way to the other side. Turns around, and here he comes, all the way back. They cheer wildly. Yay, you know, we knew you could do it. So then he looks at the crowd and says, okay, who wants to get in the wheelbarrow? You see, that's kind of what our faith being completed by our works is about. We can say we have faith, but do we trust God enough to get in the wheelbarrow and let him push us across that wire? Because, you see, those works that he's prepared for us beforehand, well, they're not all easy, and they're not all safe, and they're not all without sacrifice. And so the question for all of us becomes, am I willing to trust God? And as we do that step by step, you see, what we discover is that our faith grows. If I take one step of faith and God demonstrates to me that he can be trusted, then my faith in him grows. And now I'm ready to take a bigger step. And I see that he can be trusted. And I can take an even bigger step. That's what we mean by our faith being completed by our works. It's only as we engage in the things that God has called us to do after we're saved that we really discover the extent of our faith and whether or not God truly can be trusted. Now, let's shift gears here a little bit and look at something just a bit different. And this is where I want to just spend the remainder of the time, because I've said this to you before. As you're looking at a passage, one of the things you want to do is look for words that are repeated, because that's kind of an indication to you of the meaning in that passage. Well, it's very clear. The word that's repeated here over and over and over, right? Works. What the heck are works? Couldn't you be more specific, James? I mean, works? What is that? So that's kind of where I got hung up this week studying this passage. It's like, what is he talking about? What are the works? Because, you know, we can read a passage like this and just kind of fly through it and think we understand it. But maybe we need to kind of pause for a minute and consider, do we really understand what James is talking about when he says that it's our works that prove our faith? It's our works that cause our faith to grow. What are those works exactly that do those things? Well, let's pay attention to what he does for us here, because he shows us, first of all, he gives us an illustration, and then he gives us two examples of what he means by works. The first, of course, in verse 15, the illustration: if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So that's his illustration. And then he turns to two Old Testament examples. First of all, the example of Abraham. Now, Abraham, for any of you who have studied it, you know, Paul says Abraham is the father of the faith. He came before all of us. And, you know, we read in Genesis 15 that he believed in God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Now, the interesting thing is that James here points to that passage that says it was credited to him as righteousness, but he also points to something else: the works of Abraham. And the works of Abraham came many years after that belief that we're told Abraham had. The works came after the birth of this son that was so unlikely, who grew up, and then Abraham was called to do what? To sacrifice his only son. And what did Abraham do? Yeah. And it wasn't just that he said, I'll do it. He followed through all the way up to the point of having the knife over the body of his son. And only at that point did God say, stop. James says those are works that confirm Abraham's faith, and that certainly completed his faith. And then, of course, we're pointed to this other very unlikely example, Rahab the prostitute, who did what? Even though we don't have any idea really what her background was, whether or not she had any sense of who God was, yet we see through her actions that she trusted God. She allowed these spies, the Israelite spies, to escape through her help. Even at risk of her own death. Okay, so now what do these three, the illustration and the two examples, these three stories, what do they have in common? When we think about what are the works that confirm our faith and complete our faith? Well, at the very least, they're all about other people, right? They're about, you think about Abraham, they're about sacrifice. They're about selflessness. They're about giving up things that we have or might want. That seems to be the common thread that runs through this. And here's what there's no reference at all from James to. Obedience to laws, religious behavior, engagement in religious practices or ceremonies. James has nothing to say about any of that. Those apparently are not the kinds of works that he's talking about. Although that's where we as human beings often go, right? Okay, well, I believe in God and I have faith in God, and so I'll demonstrate it to you by going to church, by taking communion, by fasting for Lent. Now, obviously I have to be careful here. There is nothing wrong with any of that stuff, right? It's not bad. It's not wrong. It's not going to harm you. But it's also not going to save you. And not only that, it doesn't say anything about your faith. Although I say all that, God went a bit further than that. If you turn back to Isaiah, you know, God spoke through the prophet Isaiah to his people about all of their failures. And this passage in Isaiah 58, he speaks to their religious practices. And listen to what he says. This is a lengthy passage, but I want to read the whole thing for you. Isaiah 58, verses 1 through 7. Shout with the voice of a trumpet blast. Shout aloud. Don't be timid. Tell my people Israel of their sins. This is God speaking to Isaiah. Yet they act so pious. They come to the temple every day and seem delighted to learn all about me. They act like a righteous nation that would never abandon the law of its God. They ask me to take action on their behalf, pretending they want to be near me. We have fasted before you, they say. Why aren't you impressed? We've been very hard on ourselves, and you don't even notice it. I will tell you why, I respond. It's because you are fasting to please yourselves. Even while you fast, you keep oppressing your workers. What good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarreling? This kind of fasting will never get you anywhere with me. You humble yourselves by going through the motions of penance, bowing your heads like reeds bending in the wind. You dress in burlap and cover yourselves with ashes. Is this what you call fasting? Do you really think this will please the Lord? No, this is the kind of fasting I want. Free those who are wrongly imprisoned. Lighten the burden of those who work for you. Let the oppressed go free and remove the chains that bind people. Share your food with the hungry and give shelter to the homeless. Give clothes to those who need them, and do not hide from relatives who need your help. God says, I don't care about all your religious stuff. I don't care about all the things that you do to try to impress me or other people. God says, what I care about is how you treat other people, particularly those who can't take care of themselves. That's how you demonstrate that you have faith. That's how you complete your faith. Do you care for others who can't take care of themselves? That's the works, you see, that James is talking about. And look, I know you kind of, with everything, of course, you have to find a balance, right? And I think I, at times, have tended to go way overboard in this direction of, because of passages like this that I read, I want to stay as far away from religious ceremony as I can. Some of you have even asked at times here, why don't we do communion more often than we do? Well, it's because of my fear of getting caught up in religious ceremony. And I think we have to be careful of taking this call to things like communion so literally that we think we have to do it every week. If we do that, again, it's, as God says through the prophet Isaiah, we're just doing that for ourselves. It doesn't have anything to do with God. We're just doing it to make ourselves feel better. Now, as I said, balance, though. So we do periodically engage in communion because it's something that the church has historically engaged in, right? We probably need to do it more frequently, I admit. But we're not going to do it every week. I can tell you that. You just have to find this balance, right? We have to be careful to stay away from getting comfortable in religious ceremony. So again, let's come back to these works. How can we do that? Well, I don't necessarily think it's all that complicated. Again, relying on what God said through the prophet Isaiah, we just need to look out for other people. Engage in, here's the thing, another word that we could use here is what? Ministry. It's a word that's kind of gotten a bad connotation or too narrow of a connotation where we've kind of said, you know, it's the pastors and the leaders of the church who do ministry and you all think that you're just here to support us who are in vocational ministry. Of course, that's completely backwards, right? We go back to Paul again in Ephesians. He says, and I'll just read this one segment of his argument there in Ephesians 4:12, and this is directed to me as your pastor. What's my job? To equip the saints, that's you, for the work of ministry. You are the ones who are supposed to be doing the ministry, not me. Well, I am too. But my primary job is to equip you all to do the work of the ministry. And, you know, I bring that word up, ministry, because we could use it, I think, interchangeably with James's word, work. We are all called to, as a result of our faith, engage in this work of the ministry, serving other people. And I really think, it, you know, I heard this, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, but a very simple definition for you of ministry is this: serving others in a way that glorifies God. Serving others in a way that glorifies God. I think it's just that simple. We don't have to make it complicated. We don't have to wrestle with, oh, God, what are you calling me to do? What should I do this week? And then, you know, as we wrestle with that, then we get caught up in our own stuff. And before you know it, we've forgotten that we're supposed to be doing ministry as we go through the week. Again, Jamie and I were talking. We really did a lot of talking this week, comparatively. But he brought up this notion, and it reminded me, he was talking about a church, a friend of his who's started a church, where, in Michigan, I think you said? And they've got kind of some different things that they're trying with small groups and talking about doing some service project type things. And he reminded me of a book that I read many years ago. It was written in the early 2000s by a pastor of the Vineyard Church, actually, over in Cincinnati. And it's called 101 Ways to Reach Your Community. And all it is, it's just these very simple little things that you can do as groups to go out and serve people. I mean, simple little thing, as simple as this. Get a bunch of water bottles and go to an intersection in the middle of summer and just hand out water bottles to cars as they come to a stop at the stoplight. Or go to Meijer or Walmart or whatever grocery store you frequent and stand at the door. Now, people will be freaked out by this, granted, but stand at the door and say, can I help you get your groceries to the car? Can I help you unload your groceries? Yeah, people will be freaked out, I know, but There are 100 other ideas, okay? You don't have to use that one. But it's just simple things like that. That's meeting the needs of other people to glorify God. That's all we're talking about here when James says works. It's just, it doesn't have to be complicated. We don't have to spend all kinds of time trying to figure it out. We don't have to spend all of our time trying to understand what God has to say. All we have to do is get out there and serve people. Meet their needs as we become aware of them. And do it in a way that glorifies God, which means we don't seek to draw attention to ourselves. We don't seek to gain anything from this activity that we engage in. We simply, and this is, again, in this book, Shogren, Steve Shogren is the guy's name. He kind of reminds us of the way to do this. You don't go out of your way to say, "Oh, I'm a member of this church and we're out here giving you a water bottle." No. All you do is, if they ask, "Why are you doing this?" just say something like, "Because I believe if Jesus were here, he would do this because he loves you." That glorifies God. That points to God, not to you. So it's just that simple. Sorry, the computer's updating again. I still haven't taken care of it. So here's the thing for all of us that I think we have to wrestle with this week and the week after and the month after that and the month after that. If I truly not only believe in God, but have faith in God, what are the works? What's the ministry that I'm engaged in on a daily basis that really proves that, that demonstrates that, that confirms it, and that is actually helping me to grow in my faith? Who am I serving? What are the needs that I'm meeting? You know, it's what we've talked about, the very kind of foundation for what we're doing here in the coffee house. We are here to serve and meet the needs of the community. But we don't do that as an organization. How does it get done? Through each of you individually. In your own personal lives, doing the ministry every day, meeting needs as they're made aware to you. So, our challenge for all of us is to simply ask God to help us have our eyes open, have our ears open, be aware. See, I think this ultimately, in a lot of ways, is the hardest part of this. Be aware of other people. We get so caught up in our own lives, the stuff that's going on that we're engaged in, that we're concerned about, that we're worried about, that we forget we're supposed to be paying attention to other people. So let's kind of start there. Let's do our best every day of this week. And we've got to do this. The only way we can do it is through the power of the Spirit. We have to ask God to help us do this. Let's be aware of other people as we go through this week. I'm not even telling you necessarily have to do anything yet. Let's just take it a step at a time. Let's do our best every day to be aware of other people. And see, I think what will happen if you do that,